You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Welcome back to the Best Practices Show. My name is Kirk Barrett, where I'm your host, and we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over. And I got to tell you, today's episode is going to be a lot of fun because it's one of my fairly new friends who I got to know last year during the COVID-19 relief conference, Tom Viola, who is amazing and one of the most funny, relevant, smart, you know, super guys you're ever going to find in dental education. So you're not going to want to miss this. And today we're going to be talking about up in smoke, will cannabis replace analgesics in dental pain management? So you don't want to miss this at all, ever. This is going to be a big issue, I would imagine, in almost every state. And if you're in practicing Colorado, you already know it's a big issue. So make sure you stick around and hit the share button for this. But I got to do a couple things before we get started. Two things. Number one, I always like to welcome you guys. I'm telling you, if you're listening right now, I don't get it. And I like it. You guys don't watch any of the videos. I put all these videos out. You guys don't watch them. You don't click them. But you download the audio podcast like crazy, which I love. So do me a favor. If you're listening to podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, I don't care what you're listening to. If you're driving, pull over. Do me a favor. Just, you're listening to this episode right now. You see that little button right there? It's called subscribe. Just click the subscribe button because I want you to keep showing up with us every single week. Because every single week, I'm going to bring you a brand new expert in dentistry to help you create a better practice and a better life. And you're going to see, I don't know very much. That's why I invite my friends and ask them great questions. And those guys are the experts. And I don't want you to miss out. So keep showing up with us. Keep hanging out. Number two, we take a ton of show notes. So everything Tom and I talk about, you're going to see our writers are going to write it all up. I'm going to ask you to follow Tom on social media. His Instagram is the best ever. Check out his webinars. Check out his stuff. And if you're looking for a great speaker, don't look any farther. He is amazing. It'll blow you away. And your study club will absolutely love it or meeting. So make sure you check that out. And just flip it up to the show notes. You'll find all of his contact information. And then lastly, we still get these questions. Like every day I get a text or an email like, what do you do? Can you help me? Like we do a lot of things. Like I love the education. I was joking with Tom before we went live. I got to find a way to do this and make a living just doing podcasts because I just enjoy it so much. I am a certified bona fide CE junkie. My wife thinks I have a huge issue with this. Like I could listen to CE 5 days a week and I think it would just only energize me. But unfortunately I got to go to work at some point and you're probably like me. But what our core business is, if you're really asking, and maybe you're not asking, but I'm going to tell you anyway, our core business, we're dental practice coaches. It's all I've ever done. This is our 25th year of business. We're a small company, but here's what we do. If you're thinking, gosh, my schedule isn't the best. I don't like working all these crazy hours or my chairs aren't full. That's what we do. We help you create a schedule you like and fill the chairs with the stuff that you like. Or if you're thinking, I don't want to write off 35 or 45% of my production to all these PPOs. You don't want to do that anymore. I would suggest you don't do that anymore. Well, give us a call. That's what we do. Or if you're thinking, I just got to get these people getting along here in my office because I got two people at the front aren't getting along and I don't even know what's going on in the other part of my practice. Give us a call. That's what we do. ActDental.com. Figure it out. Go there. Check it out. We help you create a better practice and a better life. The biggest part of dentistry is just enjoying the ride. So make sure you check that out. Now, speaking of enjoying the ride, one of the rides I really enjoyed is getting to know you, Tom. Like, we're going to talk about some fun stuff. And you know, you're a big Cheech and Chong fan. And I was joking, like, I'm 51. So that was like the taboo movie that we never watched, you know, or my dad would walk in and watch. What are you watching? Nothing, you know, type of a thing. So, you know, today we're going to be talking about Up in Smoke, the cannabis issue in dentistry. Will it replace analgesic? That's a lot of words in dental pain management. But here, you're the expert. But before we go there, I like people to know who you are before we get into this, because I love every minute I get with you. Tomorrow, you're going to be speaking at our master classes. But if we get these young dentists, we have a ton of young dentists listening, and they don't know who Tom Viola is, give us the skinny. Who's Tom Viola?
So Tom Viola is me. I'm the pharmacist. I started out in the 80s, licensed as a pharmacist, working and practicing and living in New York City, which you can tell just by listening to me. Eventually you'll get that Brooklyn accent down, folks. Don't worry, even if it is on audio. Right. And then decided to become go back to school and pick up additional credentials in pharmacology, and then eventually to become a specialist in dentistry. So dental pharmacology is my forte. It's what I do. But I've always, much like Kirk, appreciated the ride. Just love being alongside you guys and what you do every day, making those awesome clinical decisions that you make every day. I'm here to give you that education and information you need to help you make those decisions. So in my best Brooklyn accent, I could say this, my friends, I don't want to be you, as in, I don't want to be you. You're the clinician. You're intimately involved in that patient's care. You need the information and education necessary to make those decisions. I'm here to help.
Yeah, dude, I love it. Now, I'm going to sprinkle the infill with this. Tom, give him your social media, and how do I find out more? And then talk about I love your declassified in your slogan. Can you just tell us what that means before we get started?
Absolutely. So one of the things I learned right away, right out of the gate when I was started to teach pharmacology in dental schools and hygiene schools, is that pharmacology sucks and everybody knows it. Okay. And the reason it sucks is because it's hard to master. It's a lot of information. It's almost too much information to stick in your brain at one time. And it's mostly jargon. So unless you really understand the basics of physiology and then understand how drugs work and the pharmacology and can speak in that jargon, most of that information is basically over your head. And so I get it, because I've done that when I've attended courses in dentistry, that I don't know the terminology either. So my goal in forming the company Pharmacology Declassified was to basically take pharmacology and do that, declassify it, demystify it, take all of the jargon out. Make it simple, easy to understand, easy to use, not because you couldn't understand it, but why strain your brain so hard? And let's make it easy so that it's practical and applicable to everyday practice in a dental office.
And you certainly do that. I mean, I barely graduated from high school and college, and I'm telling you, you make it so simple that even I can understand that. So if you're a dentist listening, I'm just telling you, check it out. Your team members will love his stuff too. And make sure you check out the previous episode where he shows us, and he walked us through it with three amazing questions on the preclinical that'll change your life and make your new patient process and existing patient process so much easier. So check that out. Now, Tom, why the cannabis? Let's talk about the why before we get in the how. Like, cannabis, holy moly, it's legal now in a few states. Like, why is this a big issue for dentists from your perspective?
Well, the thing is, cannabis is an unknown. You know, I didn't learn about it in school. You didn't learn about it in school, because at the time, cannabis was still a Schedule I substance under the federal law, which meant it was illegal, like heroin, like LSD. So we didn't learn much about it, and we really didn't anticipate that cannabis was going to get such widespread political and social acceptance and medical acceptance as it has now. Honestly, it's still a quagmire. It's still illegal, Schedule I at the federal level, but approved, and if you want to call it that, or legalized or decriminalized in 35 states throughout the country. So it leaves everybody in a quandary, because, again, your patients have never had such widespread access to a drug that we, in our education, never really learned much about. So my job in putting these courses together about cannabis is to try to spread the word. Like, here's what you need to know as a dental professional about cannabis.
Right. And from your perspective, because you're privy to a lot of these conversations, I mean, it's logical to think that all 50 states eventually would make this decriminalized for the financial incentives, correct? So right. I don't care if you're on the bus, off the bus, it's going to be a conversation in a dental office. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I will tell you the biggest issue with cannabis is where it stands legally. So again, at the federal level, it's Schedule One, it's illegal. And people say, well, how did that happen? How is it that it's illegal at the federal level, but legal at the state level? And it's one of those rare instances where the states are actually more liberal than the federal government. It actually goes back to the early 1900s with alcohol. When alcohol was a problem in the United States, the states couldn't figure out what to do with it. Some states said it was okay. Some states didn't. The bordering states would clash. And so they went to the federal government and said, you know, you're the higher authority. You figure it out for us. But really, again, and under the Constitution, the federal government has no authority over certain things that the states did not give them authority over. I mean, the states have ultimately all the power in the United States. So they are the ones that give to the federal government the powers that the federal government has under a 10th Amendment, right? But in the 10th Amendment, it doesn't say substances. Right. So when alcohol became an issue, and the states went to the feds said, well, if you want us to handle it, you have to pass a constitutional amendment, which we did, called, you know, colloquially prohibition. But what happened 12 years later? It was a dismal failure. So guess what? The state said, yeah, let's just go back to using alcohol again. But at this point, the feds said, wait a second, it's illegal. You just made it constitutionally illegal to have alcohol. If you want to sell alcohol, you got to pass another constitutional amendment, which they did. And most constitutional scholars will tell you that that was a blight on the Constitution that will never be erased. Nobody ever wanted to do it again. And so all these years later now, 1960s or so, air travel becomes pretty affordable for lots of people. People go abroad. Guess what? They come home with souvenirs. And one more time, the U.S. is overrun with substances. Again, the states go to the feds and say, help us out here. We can't do this on our own. And the feds say, didn't we have this conversation already? You want to do this again? You know, we'd have to pass another constitutional amendment. But this time the state said, just do it. And they did. And they passed the Controlled Substances Act of 1970. And in that act, DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, was empowered. They put together schedules of substances based on how addictive the substance was. And marijuana or cannabis ended up in Schedule 1. No accepted medical indication. Unsafe for use, and therefore what? Illegal to possess. But it didn't take long. 5 years later, the state of California said, you know what? We think that cannabis can be used to lower intraocular pressure in patients with glaucoma. We're going to try it. And of course, the Fed said, you can't do that. And the state of California said, yeah, watch me. It's never been a law that has been promulgated outside the walls of Congress. So yes, the law was supposed to apply to all the states, but the states never actually ratified a constitution giving the federal government that authority. So California took it back. And guess what? I think it was almost 12 or so years later, the state of California again said, okay, it's no longer just medical marijuana. We're going to make it legal for everyone for recreational use. Again, Fed said, can't do that. And the state of California said, sure we can. And of course, if you were, you know, around in the 80s under the Reagan administration and other administrations, you saw how the feds went into California and did raids and stuff. But at the end of the day, California prevailed. Right. And every state thereafter followed in California's footsteps. So now we have 35 states with California leading the way, has in some way either legalized or decriminalized cannabis. And all that means is your patients use cannabis. Hold on. Your employees use cannabis. Hold on. You might use cannabis. Now, what are the ramifications and implications of cannabis in dentistry? Well, Kirk, that's what I hope we get to cover today. It's not just the clinical considerations. It's also some of the legal and ethical considerations as well.
Right. And we are going to cover all that. And I think we got to, you know, skinny this down for people that don't know. And honestly, I don't know that much. I'm an alcohol guy, so I'm not, you know, I love beer and But if I don't know a lot about cannabis and the analgesics part, like, I think number one is just, where do you even start? Let's say I'm a young dentist. Listen to this, Tom. I'm like, wow. I did not sign up for this. You're talking my employees, my patients now. I might have an associate that's smoking. Like, where do I even start with this?
So let's start with the basics, okay? Let's start with what cannabis is. So we know cannabis is a botanical. It's a plant, okay? It was called marijuana for, you know, hundreds of years, but that name was often used in a derogatory way. So now we call it by its more botanical name, cannabis. Okay. There were originally three strains, sativa, indica, and ruderalis, but none of those individual strains, if you will, ever did exactly what we wanted them to do, which is what? Provide high THC content, right? That's the psychoactive portion, right? Along with some CBD content, because CBD takes the edge off some of the more negative effects of THC, and make a plant that's easy to harvest and easy to grow. None of the three original strains did that. So what we did was GMO, crossbreeding, genetic modification, and we came up with hundreds of hybrids. And that's what the first thing you need to know as a dental professional is that when your patient is smoking, consuming as a gummy, vaping, it's probably not one of the three original strains, but some hybrid of those three strains that specializes in a specific THC or CBD content that the patient's demanding or the patient expects. All right, so hybrids, what else? The next thing to realize is that many people believe that cannabis, marijuana, mellows you out. And therefore, if I thought by logical extension of mellows you out, that means it must lower your blood pressure, lower your heart rate, you know, make you calm and less anxious. Actually, that's not true. Actually, cannabis raises blood pressure and raises heart rate. And in high enough doses can actually cause paradoxical effects of what? Dysphoria, anxiety, agitation. Wait, what? I thought cannabis was supposed to relax you.
Right.
But it's the dosing and it's the content. Everyone's pushing for higher and higher concentrations of THC. But at those high concentrations, the negative aspects manifest themselves.
Wow. And then the interactivity, if that's even the right word, and its effects. I mean, in some of these states, Tom, I mean, you almost have to make it part of the questionnaire. I've heard this from some docs in Colorado. Are you high right now or have you? Because you've got to know, I mean, patients, number one, are they making the right decisions? Number two, what's the effect on this? If we go any farther with treatment, all that kind of stuff. This is important stuff to understand.
Well, that's where the opioid thing comes from, Kirk. And that's why we together we come up with this title of, you know, will it affect analgesics in dentistry? You know, the thing about cannabis is the states approved cannabis initially for medical use. Okay, so what kind of medical use? Well, you know, all of these different approved indications. Now, the thing is, each state got to dictate which indication was approved, right? So if you had a qualifying condition, you got access to medical marijuana. Well, it didn't take long for some states to say, let's use cannabis or medical marijuana to treat opioid addiction. What? That's like,
that's crazy,
right? Some people's minds, that's like trading one addiction for another.
Yeah.
But that the roots of that came from the fact that cannabis was already approved for use in those states to treat chronic pain. So if cannabis can replace opioids in treating chronic pain, why can't cannabis replace opioids in treating opioid addiction? Well, that's what happened. But now, again, the next extension of that is, why do I have to just use it for chronic pain? I'm already a cannabis user. Why can't I use cannabis in the dental office? Why can't I, you know, load up on cannabis before my dental appointment? And now not only am I calm, so I don't need like benzodiazepines like Xanax or Valium or Halcyon, but after the fact, I can keep using cannabis. And since it's a good pain reliever, it should treat my post-operative pain as well. All of a sudden, this dovetails very well with what? Two things. One, the push for less pharmaceuticals, right? Why do I need drugs when I can use something that's natural or botanical? But then it also dovetails with this whole opioid epidemic that we're going through and the mandatory opioid education on two fronts. Number one, if I could use cannabis, I don't need opioids. So why do I bother? From our perspective as dental professionals, it's like, yeah, you're right. If you can use cannabis, why do I need to prescribe an opioid? I'm good with that too. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the legislation in all these states where opioid education is mandatory, what's one of the primary things that's central to all of those education programs? Did you educate the patient and did you ask an at-risk patient one question? Do you have or have you had an issue with substances in your past? And guess what? Cannabis is a substance. Your patient may not agree with it. Heck, you may not agree with it. But at the end of the day, it is. So all of a sudden, it's easy for the patient to say, hey, don't worry about it, doc. I had a gummy an hour ago. I'm good. But is that substance abuse?
Right. And then on top of it, number one, dental offices rushing too much following those protocols and then not getting accurate answers. I'm sure, I mean, it'd be fascinating to know what percentage of people say, yep, I've had a substance abuse problem, where probably half of them would say, absolutely not. I'm not checking that box, right?
Yes. Well, we don't even ask. That's the thing. I've been as a consultant, I've worked in dental offices, helping them with their intake process, you know, and they hire me to come in and go over the whole process with them. And that's the one thing that's always lacking. Like we talked about in our last show together, Kirk, it was, you know, the three questions about how to take a good medical history. This is the next, if you want, the fourth question is, do you use cannabis? And if you do, when was the last time you used it? Because that's going to affect the vital signs, as I said, right? Increased blood pressure, increased pulse. Why do I care? Here's the most basic answer I can give. You and I both know you're probably going to use local anesthesia, okay? Patients who use cannabis are resistant to the effects of anesthetic agents. Okay, well, then I'd probably have to use more, right? So you're going to use more anesthetic, and you're probably going to have to use epinephrine. Why? Well, if the patient's resistant, you want to use the epinephrine to make the anesthesia more profound. Okay, that makes sense. So I'd use more anesthesia and more epinephrine in a patient who's a cannabis user because they're resistant to the effects of anesthetics. But by the very use of cannabis, that patient is already hypertensive and tachycardic. So you just gave more anesthesia and epinephrine to a patient who's hypertensive and tachycardic. Would you do that to a patient in any other realm? Probably not.
Yeah.
Here with cannabis use, it happens all the time.
Yeah. Are you, I mean, I'm even wondering how many dentists even know that? Is there
You know? Right, that's the thing, Kirk. I mean, it's not well known. We didn't learn it in school, remember? That's the thing. So how many dentists know it? Not many at all.
Right. And then on top of it, you know, dentists always want the research. So when we're talking about opioids or cannabis, does cannabis really relieve pain at the levels we think it? Or is this kind of an excuse or an alternative? Or I'm even thinking the word gateway. Or I mean, there's so many things that come to mind. I don't know. I've never even thought of cannabis, or I've been doing this for a long time, as a legitimate pain reliever or analgesic, right?
Well, it doesn't work in dentistry. And that's the thing, because dental pain is acute inflammatory pain, not chronic pain.
Right.
So to treat acute inflammatory pain, what's the drug necessary? An anti-inflammatory. But there's nothing anti-inflammatory about cannabis. So you could ask, you can try, but at the end of the day, cannabis just isn't our choice for treating dental pain. However, that's a level of understanding that you and I and the people who listen to this podcast have. Your patient, however, a layperson, looks at cannabis sort of through rose-colored glasses, if you'll forgive the partially intended pun there, as if, you know, hey, I don't know. Cannabis is good for lots of things. Let's try it out for this too, because I don't want to take pills. I don't want to take something that's artificial. I want to take something that's natural.
Right. Yeah. And then as far as the education side, I mean, opioids, that's now required. Where do you see this going with cannabis? And it has cannabis, has the training, I mean, you do it, but how are the states doing with the training around cannabis in dental offices?
Not doing anything at all. And the biggest deficit I can tell you, Kirk, is the fact that there's very little information available about cannabis. You know, it's taken me years to build the information I have into my course, and I've got to pay attention to this every day because something in the cannabis industry changes literally every day. And I'll tell you why. People say, well, why isn't there any information on cannabis? Okay, where would the information come from? more than likely, the way our government is set up and the way the FDA is set up, a big pharmaceutical company would have to invest a large sum of money into cannabis to come up with the information that we're looking for. You know, how does it work? What does it do? How can we harvest what it is and what it does for a benefit? Okay, you're right, Viola. Then why don't we have pharmaceutical companies that do this? Pharmaceutical companies won't even touch cannabis. The reason? It's illegal at the federal level. The minute they would take cannabis, any kind of cannabis compound, out of their facility and drop ship it to another state, that's illegal. Even if it was legal in their state and the state they were shipping to. What? Crossing state lines at the federal level, cannabis is illegal. That's interstate commerce. That's federal law. What that company just did is break federal law. Can you imagine the quandary that would occur beyond that? So no pharmaceutical company is going to touch it unless it gets descheduled out of Schedule One to, you know, altogether, or at least rescheduled to a schedule where, you know, you can still allow the use because it's no longer illegal. All right, so fine. Freaking deschedule it then. That's perfect.
Right.
Why not? There's precedent.
Yeah.
What's the precedent?
Other complications, you already pointed to this too. There's no standardization of cannabis coming out, and it's kind of like the coffee thing. Like, you can't make coffee strong enough now. And now if you go to Cuba, you can get Cubano coffee, which is like 100 times more. Or if you go to Italy, you can have coffee that's just like off the charts. And I would imagine everybody's trying to supersize it or make it that much more potent as the months go by. And even from friends that you might meet that are casual users, they go, oh, gummies are just not as good as this or whatever, you know, right, type of thing. And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. But I would imagine that's a moving target also.
Well, that's the thing. Where do I get my cannabis from? Right? So if you live in a state where it's allowed for recreational use, you can get it at any dispensary, right? If you're in a state where it's just medical use and you have a medical ID card, you can get it at any dispensary. But the majority of people buy their cannabis, if not from a dispensary, just as often from a black market source. Friends, relatives, people who distribute cannabis, who've always distributed cannabis. And then there's all the different forms. There's the gummies, and there's the vaping cartridges, and there's the oils. And so every one of those can have a different THC content / CBD content. And let's just pick one segment, gummies. You can buy gummies from different sources, and they all have different amounts of THC and CBD. So the fact that the federal government hasn't descheduled it and that big pharmaceutical companies don't make a product from it means what? There's all this widespread manufacture of this drug that's not controlled, that's not standardized. And let's face it, that just asks for the introduction of chemicals and substances that really shouldn't be in those dosage forms that right. can impact on dentistry. Plus, the other problem with cannabis is the stronger you make it, the more it affects what we call CB2 receptors in the body. The CB2 receptors govern two things, really. They govern the GI and the immune system to some extent. So what does that mean? If you use cannabis on a regular basis and in large enough quantities, number one, you're going to get a syndrome called cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome, constant vomiting from cannabis. These are the folks that take hot showers like 10 times a day because a hot shower is the only thing that can break that cycle of nausea. And what do you think they use to treat the nausea? More cannabis. So that is in itself a problem, because if anybody knows about the effects of acid on dentition, it would be us, right? Mm-hmm. But the other problem is the CB2 receptors in the immune system. Stimulating those in large enough quantities of cannabis means what? The patient becomes immunosuppressed. So wait a minute. Did anybody ever anticipate that cannabis would cause immunosuppression, increased risk of infection? So that means what? Bacterial, fungal, viral, secondary infections after dental procedures. That also means what? Infection with HPV, which can lead to head and neck cancer. So all of a sudden, cannabis isn't as easy as, well, it's just that drug that mellows you out. It becomes very complicated because of its impact on dentistry, whether it's directly or indirectly. But also, it has to do with the fact that there's no standardization. So when a patient identifies as a cannabis user, to be honest, you don't know what that means.
Right. You're speaking of freaking me out or calling me down. Now I'm really freaked out at a couple of things. I have so many questions. It's anyone's guess, Tom, but what's the future look like? Because The drug issue is a huge issue in dentistry to begin with, on both sides, with patients and with the profession. What can you anticipate the future is going to look like?
Well, the future of cannabis is bright for the industry, and I'll tell you why. Number one, because there's a lot of offshoots of cannabis. So in 2018, President Trump signed the Farm Bill, and that descheduled one aspect of cannabis, which was what? It descheduled hemp. Okay, now hemp was descheduled, taken out of Schedule 1. That's a precedent, okay? If you can remove hemp out of Schedule 1, why can't you remove cannabis itself from Schedule 1? Okay, but to remove hemp out of Schedule 1. Now, what the next thing is, well, what are you going to do with hemp? I can make biofuel, I can make cannabis. More than likely, I'm going to make, you know, CBD. So CBD oil is derived from hemp. Great, I can buy it on any shelf in any store, grocery store, whatever. It's there on the shelf. Is it psychoactive? No. Why? Because everybody pledges that the CBD contains less than 0.3% total THC content, so it's not really psychoactive. It's just there to relieve anxiety, maybe, and pain. Okay. But no one's watching. And if I'm a nefarious CBD producer and no one's watching, I might make mine synthetically, not derived from hemp like the law indicates or demands, but I might make mine synthetically. And therefore, I can add any THC content I want. Yeah. So my product's on the shelf next to some other product that has 0.3%, and my product, let's say, has 0.6% or even 1% THC. The first time you try my product, you're going to like it. Okay. And now you might fail a drug test. Now you might be operating machinery or operating something under the influence. And then there's Delta-8 THC. Now, Delta-8 THC is very similar to the THC we all know, which is actually Delta-9 THC. Delta-9 THC is the THC you find in cannabis that gives you the euphoria, the hallucinogenic effect, and so on. Delta-8 is only different by the position of one double bond, but it's still hallucinogenic. Problem? It can be derived and synthesized from hemp. So wait a minute, hemp's legal. Right. Well, then that would mean that Delta-8 THC, by that same conclusion, is also legal. Right. But it's hallucinogenic. Right. So do we know what your patient's using? Are they using something derived from hemp? Are they using something, you know, that's commercially available, like some products are available in some other countries? Or are they using something that's homegrown here? So that's the first problem. And here's my ultimate point. I don't know what my patient's using. I don't know if it's CBD, Delta-8 THC, or good old plain marijuana, which is a combination of THC and CBD. But I know one thing. Every one of those dosage forms has an effect on dentistry in one way or another. And that's what I hope we get to Kurt. I want to talk about the dosage forms because a lot of people don't know how that matters when it comes to marijuana.
Yeah, let's go there. So what does that mean when it comes to dosage forms?
All right. So oral dosage forms are the forms a lot of people know and love because, you know, it's like gummies, right? And just the word gummy makes it seem less, you know, likely to cause grief for anybody because it's a gummy. Come on, it's considered benign. But those gummies can contain lots of THC and CBD in various combinations and lots of other impurities like heavy metals and carcinogens and things that were native to the soil where that original plant material was grown, where the plant was grown, where it was produced. But wait a minute. Aren't they grown in pristine fields and isn't that regulated in any way? No, not depending on who made the gummy. So a lot of times these plants are grown in less than favorable conditions and they are grown in low light, you know, not like the cannabis plants we knew from yesteryear, which needed intense bright light. These are low light, right? So they don't go off the chart with the electric meter so the feds can figure out what you're doing, right? They grow in low light, moist, warm conditions. Well, what else grows in low light, moist, warm conditions? Mold. So a lot of these cannabis plants are contaminated with mold. And so the growers spray the plants with, you know, fungicide to kill the mold. Now that fungicide doesn't just go away. That's now part of the plant. And then when you harvest the plant and make, you know, products from it, some of those trace chemicals persist in the finished product. So gummies just aren't gummies. They can contain lots of other chemicals. Same thing with oils, oral oils, sublingual oils. But here's the thing about oral versus sublingual. Oral means you swallow, right? Sublingual means stick it under your tongue or in the buccal area, right? Oral is delayed onset, whereas sublingual and buccal is fast onset. Hmm. So guess what?
What?
I don't really like my job very much. But I know my job's a heck of a lot more bearable if I've got a buzz on.
Yeah.
Drink alcohol, but about an hour before I even get in the car and drive to work, I'm going to take a gummy. You don't know it. No one else around me knows it. But I'm doing pretty cool things in my brain while I'm doing my job because I'm under the influence of cannabis and there is no evidence at all.
Yeah.
So it's the delayed onset. And that's where I think this discussion we're having now, Kirk, sort of strays into the employer side of things. You're the dentist, you're the person who runs a dental practice. You won't know if your patient's under the influence because they took an oral dosage form before you even saw them show up for work. Okay, so that's the oral dosage form. Sublingual? Okay, I can't get away with that at work, can I? Really? Know anybody who sucks on a mint every hour or so? Believe me, that may be not just a Tic Tac. That could be a dosage form that contains cannabis. What? A mint? Yes. Hmm. What else? Well, okay, it's not oral dosage forms. It's not sublingual. What else? How about smoking? Oh, no, of course I know my patient would smoke cannabis. Right, but there are new strains of cannabis that persist for long periods of time. So I could smoke in the morning and you won't smell it on me when I'm already at work. And if that's not enough, then how about vaping? Okay, so now vaping has nothing to do with smoking, right? It's not combustion. Actually, it's not even vapor. It's really an aerosol. Mm-hmm. So I vape cartridges that contain THC and CBD. You wouldn't know that either. Okay, that's the employer side of things. Let's take a look at the patient side of things. Your patient takes gummies. No smell. I wouldn't know it. If they didn't admit to it, I'd have no idea. But their blood pressure is elevated and their heart rate's elevated. And they keep getting these recurrent infections of candidiasis. That's interesting. How'd that happen? No, this kid's an 18-year-old. I don't have to take his blood pressure and pulse. He's fine. He's ASA1. Is he? All of a sudden, cannabis opens up a whole new world for us as far as concern, because cannabis can span any age group. Now, it's just the young people that do cannabis. Hate to tell you this, but people my age and older, cannabis was part of our culture. And now that we have more disposable income to spend on it, and it's so widely available and so socially acceptable, we're going to do it too. Yeah. Well, wait a minute. You older patients already have cardiovascular issues. I know. And so I've just added another element to that part of patient care. Okay, keep going, Viola. Patient doesn't do oral. The patient doesn't do sublingual. What are the effects on the oral cavity of somebody who sucks on a mint literally every hour? What's in that mint? Do we know what the long-term effects are of exposing the oral mucosa to whatever's in that mint? How about smoking, right? The ADA has been pretty clear about this and said what? Smoking tobacco, smoking cannabis causes a poor quality of oral health and oral pathologies. Well, okay, so you're going to get that from cannabis and tobacco, but not just cannabis itself, right? Here's the thing. A lot of people smoke tobacco and smoke cannabis together. Or they just smoke cannabis, but combustion products cause those issues. No, I'll vape. But vaping's not innocent either. As we learned, unfortunately, over the last couple of years, based on the solvent. So we take a solvent, we run it through the cannabis plant material, come out with an extract. That extract contains traces of that solvent. And if that solvent happened to be, butane, that can cause things like lipid pneumonia. If it happened to be, vitamin E acetate, it caused EVALI, right? electronic cigarette or vaping associated lung injury. Over 60 people died from EVOLI in 2019. If it's MCT oil, lipid pneumonia. Now we use isopropyl alcohol, or if that's not enough, you know, sometimes we just use carbon dioxide gas and run it through the plant material and get a super clean extract. But the point is the plant material still had remnants of wherever it was grown and whatever was sprayed on it, or whatever was in that soil. Shouldn't anybody be watching this? Yeah. Shouldn't anybody be telling us what's safe and what's not? Well, how would you know if you don't know what's in it to begin with, if you don't know what's in that extract to begin with?
Yeah. And as far as testing, I mean, go back. One of the things you said earlier in the episode too, I mean, we're talking about patients, we're talking about care. And it didn't even enter my mind, the employees in your office, let's say you have a large office, like, I'm sure that's got to be the kind. And it's amazing to me, Tom, the number of people that don't do drug tests on employees. I've got a friend that has a juicing company. I got another one that owns a restaurant. He's like, oh no, you drug test everybody. But in a dental office, there's script pads everywhere. I mean, I don't really want to add another level of complexity to this, but you introduced it. And I'm kind of thinking, how the heck do you handle that part of it?
That's the ethical question. Okay. Let's keep employment law at an arm's length right now, because I'm no expert,
right.
But I can only talk the ethics of this. Let's just take two scenarios. Okay. The patient uses cannabis. They admit to it. I just dosed up about an hour ago at home. I took a gummy, or I just smoked a joint in my car right before I walked in here. I was out in the parking lot, or I just vaped while I was outside the front door here. First ethical dilemma that pops in my head is what? This patient's admitting they're under the influence of cannabis.
Yeah.
Can they give you informed consent? If the patient was, you know, high on alcohol, would you say they can give you informed consent? No. But in this case, if they're using cannabis, how would you know how impaired they are? I mean, at least with alcohol, you have a blood test, right? You can say, okay, well, this, you know, you blow into a tube, right? This equals so much blood alcohol concentration. You don't have that with cannabis. So you don't even know the level at which they're impaired, but you do know they're probably impaired to some extent. Can they give you informed consent? Here's the second ethical dilemma. You're the cannabis user. Come on. We, Kirk, you and I know this, right? We work in an industry that's fraught with repetitive motion injuries, right? Wrists and arms and necks and shoulders and all the stuff that becomes a common complaint to us as we, you know, we extend our lives in dentistry.
Right.
You're in chronic pain. You can't practice anymore. And then someone says to you, you should try cannabis. You go to your doc, you get the medical marijuana card, or let's say you're in a state where it's recreational use. You go buy some cannabis, and all of a sudden it's like a miracle. Wow, my pain is gone. I can go back to work. I can go practice again. Are you practicing under the influence and are therefore subject to malpractice? That's the problem with cannabis, Kirk. We don't have any rules in place. We don't have any real compass to follow here, because it's kind of like no one wants to deal with it yet because it's not legal. Yet it's impacting our practices and our patients every day.
Wow. You're only leaving with more questions. I think, you know, as everything, I mean, the anecdote for most of the things that we experience is just education and mindset. Like, we've just got to get more and more educated around this forever moving target, don't you think?
And I will say this, Kirk, I want to appeal to everybody who's listening to this, because I have to appeal to you at three levels, okay? I have to appeal to you, number one, as a patient. Think like your patient. Think like a layperson. I know it's hard, because in dentistry, we're so used to being in a dental office. We're used to the sights, the smells, the sounds. We know everything that goes on. For us, it's home, okay? But for your patient, who hardly visits you more than twice a year, it's a foreign land. So they think the sights and the smells and the sounds are overwhelming. What better way to get through it than with a little cannabis to help them out? Okay, right. So think at that level. Then think of it as a practitioner and an owner, okay? So did you ask the question, do you use cannabis? Did you use it recently? Did you use it today? okay, I asked the question, but I'm like, no, wait a minute. What do I do with that information? Do I want to know? And that's the problem. A lot of us, and I can speak for these folks because they've told me, say what? You know what? I don't want to ask. I don't want to know, because that opens up all of this Pandora's box of what do I do with the information now that I know it? But you can't hide under a rock anymore. You got to know, and you got to make those tough calls, because ultimately, I serve as an expert witness in lots of litigation, Kirk. So I can tell you, this comes back to bite us later, because under oath, you've got to say to somebody, yeah, I knew the patient used cannabis and I chose to ignore it. Who's going to admit that they knew it, right? But if there's reasonable doubt that you should have known, did you ask? That can be damning alone in any litigation. And then I ask one more thing. I have to appeal to you as a parent, because what you think you might know about cannabis, what you think you might see as signs and symptoms of your child or whoever using cannabis may not be the case at all. Most of the modern dosage forms of cannabis now, waxes, oils, don't smell like marijuana. Mm-hmm. Using them doesn't leave you with a smell of marijuana. So how would you even know your child or someone you love is using cannabis if you can't even tell by looking at them or smelling it? And one more note. The bottom line with cannabis is it's insidious. I don't mean to demonize the plant. I mean, you may not know your patient's using it, but that doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't know. It's the same thing for a family member. You may not know that they're using it, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't know. So try to err on the side of caution here and realize, okay, at least let me know so that I can make more informed decisions overall.
Yeah. Tom, absolutely amazing, as always, and thanks. Insight that's just crazy helpful to all of us.
Thanks.
Now thanks. I'm just thinking, we're going to have, I mean, this. We can almost revisit this issue yearly or quarterly as we get going and understanding its complexity. Any last thoughts you have on the cannabis possibility of replacing analgesics?
Okay, so if your patient wants to use cannabis to replace analgesics, know this. Cannabis is not anti-inflammatory. It would not be a good substitute for anti-inflammatories and or opioids in the management of adrenergic pain, because at the end of the day, it's acute inflammatory pain. Number two, keep in mind that analgesics include opioids, right? And so your patient may say, well, all right, I don't even want an NSAID. I don't want acetaminophen. I'll just use cannabis along with my any opioid you prescribe me. That's not going to fly either. Why? Because combining cannabis with opioids increases the risk of respiratory depression. And the final thought is the industry is changing. I'm going to give you one word to hold on. Kirk, how about this? Let's revisit this and let's hit this word next time we do this, okay? The word is terpene. Terpene?
Terpene?
Terpene. Essential oils. And for that matter, let's talk about flavonoids, which are flavor compounds. Mm-hmm. Right now, if you get a cartridge for vaping, more than likely it's been artificially flavored and scented to make it attractive to you. But cannabis as a botanical contains terpenes and flavonoids. And if I know how to harness those chemicals that are innate to the plant, someday soon, cannabis industry is going to make vaping solutions naturally flavored like pineapple, naturally scented like pineapple. And let me tell you this, if somebody walked by you vaping a cartridge and they left you with a scent of pineapple, or someone asked you to try it and it tasted like pineapple, would you be interested in using it? You just might be.
It's crazy. You know, I didn't even think of the mint thing either. I mean, you could have a kid chewing on mints and you don't think anything of it. So, I am so grateful to call you my friend. And I'm just going to tell you guys, if you're listening, if you've seen any of Tom's stuff, he just opens your thought process to unbelievable education on what you got to be looking for, not only with this issue, but other issues and how these, how they're all related at some point. And it's an important thing to understand as a dentist, as a team, all of that. And so, Tom, I want people to follow you. I want them to check out your stuff. How do I find you? Where do I go? Where do I start?
So the first thing you have to realize is I don't have a creative bone in my body. So my website.
Not true at all.
So my website's tomviola.com. Can't get any easier than that. So look for me at tomviola.com. And my email address is tom@tomviola.com. Even less creative. Okay. You couldn't get any less creative than that. And also find me on social media everywhere at Pharmacology Declassified, because that's the name of the company. And keep in mind, when you visit me on either social media or my website, you're ready and willing to accept all this great dental pharmacology stuff that's in, from my perspective, language that's easy to understand, easy concepts that you can use in everyday practice. On my website, you'll find my blog, you'll find my podcast, you'll find everything that, you know, makes me Tom Viola, but also courses you can take for the continuing education credits anytime you want on demand. Yeah. So if you have a love for pharmacology, or if you've hated pharmacology your whole career and said, I never understood it, I would love to know more about it finally, please come visit me. I'd love to help you, and I'd love to make pharmacology part of your everyday practice.
Yeah, and I'm going to encourage you, just check out at least, even if you're like, okay, I just got to see this, check out his webinars or his online education, which you're going to be able to find at his site. And they are fantastic. They're really well thought out. Even your slide design. So you do have a creative bone in your body. I've watched you many times. You're very sharp. You make something that's potentially incredibly dry, very interesting, fascinating, relevant, funny at times. And Tom, we're just so grateful to call you our friend and be part of this great community. So make sure you check that out. Also, now tomorrow, as the date we're shooting this, tomorrow live, we're going to be doing the ACTU Masterclass. Make sure you check that out. We're going to put a link to the masterclass in there so you can check it out. But make sure you follow Tom ultimately. And I'll say it one last time. If you're a study club director and you haven't had Tom come, you're missing out. He's that good. I'm just telling you.
Hey, Kirk, you're leaving something out.
What?
How about everything you've done for this industry over the last 2 years, my friend? You helped us through the pandemic. You were the light in an ever-increasing darkness. So thank you for you. Thank you for your company and the people that work for you. Thank everyone at ACT Dental, because without you, it would have been a really dark year. Thank you for what you do.
Well, it's very kind of you to say, and I appreciate you, because you were there. You and I got to meet in that dark time, and in full disclosure, full transparency, I was as panicked as anybody, and I needed it just about as bad as you, if you're a listener and you hung on there. And I remember, Tom, you know, you got on and you had just had COVID. You were actually the first person that I had met officially. I mean, now that when I look back, I think, oh, so-and-so had it, but you were the first person that was actually diagnosed that I had met that had COVID. And you went through that early, and you were coming on air to educate us. And I was like, holy moly, he made it through, you know? So your education, your timing, your heart, I mean, you were right with us the whole time, buddy. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Kirk. I have to tell you, I'm really happy to find out that COVID-19 infection can lead to hair loss, because that's my new excuse, okay? So don't tell anybody. Oh, I guess I said that out loud. Oh, darn it. Okay.
Hey, I must have had it years ago, probably when I was 14, because I don't know how long you've been dealing with hair loss, but when I was 14, Tom, I was doing the comb over with a little hairspray, and it would just flap up like that. And my friends were like, dude, you just got to cut that down. Like, that's not working for you. Being 18, going, you know, roller skating, and that thing's flopping all over. I look like Bill Murray in that bowling movie, whatever that movie, I forgot, Kingpin. No, I saw that movie. I'm like, that was me when I tried to grow my hair that long. So, and then I met my wife, and she's like, just take it all off. I'm like, okay, well, she's hot, you know, and she likes me with no hair. I'm good, you know?
Life is good, right? Yeah.
But you know how this is like all your friends and relatives and kids are like, wow, look at that. You used to have hair. It's so different. How long ago was that? I'm like, you be quiet, you know? So, it's all good stuff, buddy. I can't thank you enough. Thanks for being on here today, brother. Really appreciate you. I get to see you again tomorrow. Make sure you check out Tom's previous episode and all the other episodes, his social media, his webinars. It's just awesome stuff. So stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else, Tom. But thank you guys for listening. If you've listened to us this long, congratulations, because we just love having you here. And I hope you enjoyed it. If you enjoyed it like I did, do me a favor. Just hit the share button. Share this with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you want to see, whether it be from Tom, because I'll have him back over and over and over and over again. You're going to see he's really, really smart. And he can do like 28 hours of education without breathing. He's that good. And I'll have him back. But until we see you guys next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.